When you invest in human capital, the returns to human capital, well, you know, theoretically, they should be there. Of course, in the real world and in a world where there is lots of existing other constraints on people earning incomes with labor market frictions, with schools, you know, you may get kids into schools, but maybe they're not learning much because of the quality. So there's lots of other constraints that may prevent the impact of materializing.
Hi, welcome to Vox Dev Talks. My name is Tim Phillips. Progresa was a groundbreaking and much copied cash transfer program created by the Mexican government in 1997. Literally millions of children have benefited from it. And millions more around the world from the similar initiatives that were inspired by it. But now that the first Progresa generation are adults, are they still feeling that benefit? Karen McCaw of the Paris School of Economics has made an evaluation of the long-term impact of Progresa, and she joins me now. Karen, welcome to Vox Dev Talks.
Good to see you, Tim.
Now, Karen, for people who don't know, what was Progresa and why was it so innovative at the time?
It's a good question. So in 1997, the Mexican government decided to take a new approach towards both investing in human capital, whether that's nutrition, health or education, and combining that with anti-poverty measures. So they came up with a social program that had both objectives. And on the human capital side of things, the innovation in a certain way was to say, rather than focusing on supply side interventions, building schools, improving curriculums, that type of stuff that had been tried, they decided, well, let's focus on the constraints that households themselves face in investing in their children and try to design a program that addresses some of those constraints that we understand from our microeconomic theory of how that may work, and then designed a pretty complicated program trying to target several of those constraints at once. So that was a completely new approach, both on the human capital side, as I said, and then this combination with the cash transfers that made it a potentially powerful package.
I said that other countries have tried similar programs. How widely has it been copied?
So the program, quite quickly, actually, after a couple of years, got copied in many countries in Latin America. In fact, all the major countries in Latin America used a program like Progresa. It became the main social safety net program. And then a little bit later, lots of other countries in Asia, in Africa, and even the US started some conditional cash transfer programs. And of course, most recently with COVID, there's been a lot of new attention to obviously to safety nets and the potentials of CCTs to help also there.
In 1997, with it being such a pioneering idea, how much did the Mexican government know about what the impact of the program would be, and how much effort did it put into measuring that impact?
Yeah, this is in a certain way the other part of the innovation of this program, because while, you know, the theoretical foundations for the program were sound, there was a lot of things that we didn't know. So it was not a given that this was going to work. And so the innovation was that from the very beginning, they designed a rigorous impact evaluation as part of the rollout of this program and then made sure to have results very quickly in the first years, to have a team of international academics from various universities collaborating on this effort, so that by the time there was a new presidential team coming in 2000, they had a large body of evidence that they could show that this is working, let's continue doing this. And so that was another first, is where the new government came in and said, okay, instead of just changing the way usually new governments do, they changed the name, but continued the program. In fact, they scaled it up even further. And then it was in place for 20 years.
Yes, very successful in the short term. What long-term effects are you looking for here? What can we expect? And why might those long-term effects not show up after 20 years?
When you invest in human capital, the returns to human capital, well, you know, theoretically, they should be there. Of course, in the real world and in a world where there is lots of existing other constraints on people earning incomes with labor market frictions, with schools, you know, you may get kids into schools, but maybe they're not learning much because of the quality. So there's lots of other constraints that may prevent the impact of materializing. Of course, there could also be many other shocks in the process that counterbalance whatever is the impact of the program. So this is why it was important to go back to try to look at this question after 20 years, when those first generations have become transferred into adulthood, to see whether is there an actual return here in this context where we know there's lots of other frictions and imperfections. And given also that those were, you know, the most marginalized communities in Mexico, so having some additional obstacles along the way compared to kind of other Mexicans.
Yes, now you're going to measure this long-term impact. First of all, you need a sample, don't you? So how easy was it to track down that Progresa generation?
This was, of course, the main challenge of this whole adventure.
I can imagine,
and
yes.
Because we knew from the start that there was a lot of mobility, even among those people coming from these poor rural communities. I don't think we quite realized how big the mobility was, which is part of what we show in this study. But we also knew that previous attempts of finding the same children and households back after 10 years had not found many people. And so we knew this was the big challenge to address. Mm. So we designed an approach working with the government, so with the program, and using in a certain way the social capital of the program, the kind of the promoters that they have locally, the complicated approach of trying both locally, trying family networks, trying migration networks, trying in-person interviews and phones. And so a whole package where we first went to the original villages and then tried to find people no matter where they moved in Mexico or tried to reach them by phone in the US.
Quite apart from, as you say, the mobility of the original sample, so much has changed socially and economically in Mexico since 1997. So when you're doing your analysis here, are you sure that you can be successful in isolating the cause and effect of Progresa?
That's a great question. And so what we did here, so the research design, if you want to, starts from that original evaluation that the government designed, where they had randomly assigned a set of villages to start earlier than others. Because 20 years later, we're looking at the difference of having had the program 8.5 years versus 20 years, which you may think doesn't make a big difference. But then what we do is we focus on two cohorts for whom that difference in timing came at a particularly sensible period during their childhood. And so because it became at that sensible period, we can then say, well, if those that got it 18 months later during that period are still looking different 20 years later, we know that we factored out everything else by design, and so that is the result of the program. Now, it's not the total impact of the program, because it's only this differential, but at least it tells us something about the pathways, the mechanism that this program operates on the long run.
Yes, let's have a look at those two cohorts. So the first one were Progresa babies, weren't they? Very small when Progresa started. What did the program provide for them at that time?
So the program had a strong focus on as a kind of improving nutrition and preventive health, including prenatal care and postnatal care, etc. And so for them, we're really looking at the long-term impact of these investments in health and nutrition. So the cash transfers also helped the households improve the nutrition that has been shown by the early interventions that they would have, you know, they would have more animal proteins, more fruits and vegetables in the diets. And so for them, the theory of change is that better nutrition, better health early on, you would expect to lead to better cognition early on, and therefore help these children doing better in school and subsequently do better throughout life.
But 20 years on, these children are really just becoming adults. Their lives would still be changing, and there would be a lot of change for them yet to come. So what long-term impacts can you measure?
That's absolutely right. And so this is also the challenge of these long-term evaluations. As long as you catch people in a transition phase, and so when you're 20-year-old, you're very much in a transition between education and labor market, and probably many of them not yet have started their own families. So for that cohort, what we establish is the education results, because they would have, by 20 years old, you've finished a lot of your education, so we have a good sense of that. Mm-hmm. But then also knowing that for the labor market it was too early, we ask their labor market expectations, so their own understanding of, given the higher education and the, what changed for them, what extent their income expectations are different.
And what did you find? Were those benefits still present 20 years later?
For the people that got the program very early on during the first 1,000 days of their life, so and got it earlier than others, they have higher levels of education at every level of education. So they're more likely to finish primary school, secondary school, all the way to tertiary education. And that translates also in higher income expectations. They expect that the higher education is going to help them on the long term.
There is another cohort, isn't there, that was older. They were already at school. Tell me, how old were they when Progresa started, and what benefits specifically did Progresa provide for them?
So this is the cohort that we purposely selected for having been just on the transition between primary and secondary school.
Ah, right, yes.
Knowing that this is also the cohort that At that time, 20 years ago, lots of kids would stop schooling after primary school. So the fact that they got a cash transfer just at that transition helped a part of them continue and finish an extra level of education. So they finish lower secondary, so they get an additional 3 years of education. That cohort, 20 years later, is about 30 years old. And so that is the cohort now that has fully transitioned into adulthood, finished their education, have started their own families, have started having children. And so for them, we can look at a wide set of outcomes. First of all, income, of course. But it's actual income, so labor income, but also mobility, which we had said was so high, and indeed kind of household formation decisions. And so what we observe is that the difference in education that we knew existed from the short term still exists 20 years later. That translates in higher income, about 18% higher income. And part of the story there is not that they have different types of jobs, but that they have moved toward places where they earn a higher income. Uh-huh. Some of that is all the way to the US. And of course, there the income is substantially larger, but also a lot of mobility within Mexico and including return migration. So people that moved to the US and then came back and started a family. Not in the big cities, but in areas where the additional human capital has some additional comparative advantage. And then the other part we see is that, which is related to that story, is a shift in household formation. So it's a half year delay before they start their own family on average. And also, and important for the woman in particular, a half year delay in having children, which means then they had the first go at the labor market, if you want to, before starting a family.
Well, these are encouraging results for the persistence of the effects for both cohorts. So there must be some fairly relieved policymakers around the world, considering the amount of effort and money that has been dedicated to these conditional cash transfer programs. What do you think this research tells us about how these programs work and what the mechanism is for how they manage to deliver these long-term benefits?
The first important takeaway from this research really is on the young cohort, because we knew much less about those in particular on the long run, and it has also gotten less attention. And that's not just true for CCTs, that's true in general for investments in early childhood. There's a good conceptual reason why we believe it matters. There's little rigorous empirical evidence at this level of scale, so for a national level program worldwide. And so that's an important finding, because that's an important confirmation that yes, investing in these early years is important and translates, not just in theory, but in practice, even in contexts where other things are difficult, translates in real gains. So that's important because it re-emphasizes the kind of the need to focus on those early years. The older cohort, the fact that you find these impacts, I guess the main kind of surprising result in a certain way is the fact that the gains come from mobility and not through occupational change. And I think there the lesson is that when we think of the returns to education or to returns to investments in human capital, we should be wide enough. And for one thing, when we study this, we need to look for people when they move. Otherwise, we miss the big story if we only look where they remain. But also, we should expect that people, when they get a bit more opportunities, they'll use those opportunities and they'll vote with their feet, as they did in Mexico. And so that's a good news story. So of course, the results, because it increases migration to the US, some people see that as a worrying sign. But if you think at it from the perspective of the beneficiaries, it means exactly that, is that they took the opportunity. And as I said, many of them actually went and then came back to Mexico and are doing better as a result.
As you say, it is a good news story. It's an inspiring story at the time, and it continues to inspire us. So thank you for doing the hard work to bring us this good news. Karen, thank you very much.
Thanks so much, Tim.
The paper is called Education, Income and Mobility: Experimental Impacts of Childhood Exposure to Progresa After 20 Years. And the authors are Araujo and Karen McCaw. Also, if you want to find out more about the history of Progresa, then listen to our VoxDev talk, Lessons from Mexico's Poverty Reduction Program. It was a VoxDev talk with Santiago Levy, who was one of the main people behind the introduction of Progresa. We recorded that in October 2019. This has been a VoxDev talk. Now, the best way to make sure you don't miss an episode ever again is to subscribe. Go on, do it now. However you listen to VoxDev talks, you can subscribe, and then you'll get every episode. But if you have missed an episode, remember, they're all at voxdev.org, and there are also articles about the papers we feature there.